So first question I always like to ask is, when we have a preview like that, your thoughts on what you saw. Let's go this way.
Relatable. I think the challenges that come with it emotionally, the change in the family dynamic, that probably the average family doesn't consider.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about your caregiving experience.
Sure. So I have a 25-year-old son with autism. He is nonverbal, needs lots of daily living skills, support with. We've navigated the school system, which is an imperfect system, but what is a good system, and what we refer to as the CLIFT post-graduation into the adult service system. There are two distinctly different systems. And I'm sorry if I'm talking system speak, because for a living, I also run the ARC of Cumberland and Perry Counties. So for my family, when my son graduated high school, we had 3 days a week of day program. We had made a transition. He graduated in 2021 in the sort of height of COVID. So you took a child that had difficulties in just day-to-day social settings, and you isolated him, and even at 25, he is not back to where he should be with getting out of the house and a routine and going to do things. So with all that in mind, my husband and I had to sit down and decide that he was going to leave the workforce to be able to provide care. There's 8 years sort of between us, so I have the longer length of earning capacity. We kind of jokingly say we've had role reversal in the traditional sense. I'm working, my husband's the one staying home.
COVID, when you just brought that up, I just cannot imagine how difficult that was.
You know, I don't know how the average family, right? My normal is my normal. So you have a child that needs such specialized care. If the average student was able to go home, and I don't know, I'm sure that was challenging for families, but for us, it really almost turned into wasted years of school that he should have been at the age of 20 and 21, that students can stay in school till he should have been doing more community-based activities, learning job skills, like learning how to be a grown-up, and that was all taken away from him during COVID.
I think we all kind of forget what that was like, but for someone in your situation, your family, it's so difficult. So, Mia, let's talk about your situation. Well, before we do, let me get your impressions of the short clip that you saw.
Definitely agree. It's relatable because I think I live it. Some of the key points are definitely emotional and physical challenges, as well as transitioning from a daughter role to a caregiver role. And that daughter role seems to be diminishing every day, every year. And the caregiver role is gonna be 100%. Mm. And my parents are not gonna be better, especially mom, with her Parkinson and her stroke. It's her physical and her mental ability is just gonna continue to deteriorate. So definitely, I live it.
Was there a point, like one point, or was it kind of gradual where you made that transition where you thought to yourself, I'm a caregiver, I'm no longer just a daughter?
Yeah, it's a gradual, because thank goodness dad was able to help mom for a few years while I was in the workforce. And as dad got ill, and then mom, you know, with multiple conditions, gotten worse, I tried to balance my personal family life, my career, and then my parents' needs. So at the point, it gets to the point where you can't balance it. You have to give something up. So unfortunately, I have to give up my career.
Michael Leader, you have a unique role on our panel tonight in that you have been working, you and your family have been working with those in need of care for decades now. But you also have a family member that you and your wife are caregiving for. So Again, before we get into your specific situation, your thoughts on what you saw in the preview.
Well, I thought it was very, very interesting in that the situations, the families covered so many different situations. Today, we talk so much about the seniors who are turning 65, 11,000 seniors turning 65 every day, and the caregiving that they're going to need, which is kind of more of a traditional type of caregiving, but there are 4,000 rare diseases, one of which our daughter has, that also afflict people throughout the country and need various levels of caregiving. So yes, it was something we could definitely relate to.
So let's talk about that transition that was discussed earlier from being someone who, I mean, as a in administrative position, as a caregiver, but a caregiver to someone in your own family.
That's an interesting point. You know, I knew where care was available, but there are so many things that keep you up at night that I think this seminar, this program, can help others with, because those are the things that sometimes don't get spoken about. What are you going to do when we're no longer around? Now, our daughter is 44, and one of the things that we are concerned about is what happens. Our children don't live in the area. Other children don't live in the area. Who's going to be responsible for setting up care for her and making sure that she's safe and comfortable after we're no longer able to do that?
Something you just said, where people can seek resources. Do most people know that there are resources out there for caregivers, that there is some help out there? Because I get the sense that a lot of people, when they become a caregiver, think, I'm all alone. Now, they may have a spouse. They may have children, older children who help, like we saw the 14-year-old. But do people know that there are resources out there, that there is help?
Certainly some of them do, but many, many do not. Many do not know all the available resources. And that's one of the reasons I recommend to our friends who have a need for caregiving to speak to someone like an elder attorney, who also is an expert on the kinds of things that younger people need if they are in a situation where they're recipients of caregiving. And whether it's eligibility for Medicaid, it's help with Social Security disability, guardianship, powers of attorney, those kinds of things. There are people there who are focused in their careers to answer these questions for you.
I see both of you nodding along as everyone else is speaking, but the very first thing that we heard was how physically and mentally draining caregiving is. Let me start with you. Do you feel that?
I do. Some nights you get 2 hours sleep, some nights you get four, because the demand of my mom requires her to be up a couple times a night. So if you're lucky, she's up twice, and if you're not, she might be up four times. So your sleep habit is gone.
You're tired all the time.
Yes. And then obviously, you know, after you get your parents ready in the morning, you then have to do all the other errands. So those are some of the physical challenges or that tires you out. And then mentally, like I say, am I a daughter? Am I a caregiver? Because sometimes you help your parents make the decision, but sometimes you want them to be involved, but then they are not fully able to make the decision. But then they'll get a little frustrated, and as well as embarrassed and ashamed for not being as independent as they want to be. So, you know, and then couple that with going home and trying to be a mom, a wife. It some day is better and some day it's not. And I personally would love to know more resources for caregiver because I jumped into the role without really any background experience. It's just your duty as a daughter.
What did you think when that first family, when the wife was on the phone and she was told that her husband was no longer eligible for hospice? I thought she answered it pretty well, but it probably didn't do her a whole lot of good.
Unfortunately, with policies and procedures relies on, I guess, algorithm sometimes or a set of criteria. And it loses that human empathy aspect or treating the individual. You know the condition, the individual's not going to get better. They're going to get worse. But yet you put a deadline of a day or, you know, ability for them to do certain function. Well, someday the individual is better and someday they're not. So it's just a little disappointing, frustrating that the resource and the help is there, but it's not, the individual's not, and the family's not benefiting from it.
And you're tired?
Mentally, yes, more than anything else. So again, Connor's not 25, you know, he's 25, he's not a child, I can't pick him up. Like, I've given up, you know, there's a lot of behavior challenge that comes with autism, I guess is the best way I'll put it. So if he decides to sit down somewhere, we're staying until he makes the decision.
You mean in public?
I'll just give a great example. We tried to go away for Memorial Day weekend to my brother-in-law's, which was going to be a new place for Connor. It took an hour for him to decide he was going to be okay with getting in the vehicle to go. So I guess we anticipate as his parents, we know the triggers. And so you have to go there and you have to do things. I always say I can feel my shoulders rising, the tensions rising, because I know we're about to enter a 1 hour, 2 hour sort of tug of war.
You know, one of the things that struck me in the film was, okay, the three families we saw, was it four? Anyway, how loving they were. But I thought to myself, there has to be times where you're frustrated. I mean, just what you described with Connor, how do you keep your patience? How do you say, okay, I know what's going on here, I have to be patient with them?
There's a surrender that I think we have found. Again, just speaking for autism, it's so nuanced. Connor responds very well to a positive tone of voice, and there can be times where he's trying us, and I have to say, I'll get through this if I use my positive tone of voice, I have to say to myself. But my husband and I find ourselves catching ourselves in those situations all the time, and then it can just fall apart. So, you know, I'll be in the other room saying, keep it positive, Dad. Like, we're trying to encourage each other because it can be mentally exhausting.
Is your husband patient?
Yes. Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
Who's more patient?
He's not here, so I'm going to say me.
You can get away with that.
Yeah. What's funny is, again, like, I see it. Like, my whole life story, but I also have a stepson that has a disability that I raised for many of those years, and I was the one that was home, and I had that caregiver, you know, depression, rut, whatever you want to call it, and I see it in him now. As long as these roles have again reversed, I'm recognizing it in him, what I saw in me, and it's very hard. I think we don't do enough with dads and supporting men to share their feelings and frustrations with caregiving. It's very different. We've always had a knack of picking one up when the other one's down. So I'm up these days. Mm.
Michael, when did you ask yourself, your wife ask herself, can we do this?
Well,
did you ask yourself?
Yes. Slowly we did, because our daughter was pretty normal up until her late teens, and actually had started started college when ataxia affected her pretty significantly.
Now, what is that? I have to admit, there's probably a lot of people.
Spinocerebral ataxia is a kind of a definition of loss of fine and or gross motor skills, and in some cases cognition as well. Generally, a slow progression, and it's there are genetic causes and other causes, and we don't know the cause of our daughter's ataxia, and you know we didn't know whether it was something that was going to stop and get you know stabilized or whether it was going to continue. We do now have a pretty good idea what the future holds, but the one of the things that reminded me Anne reminded me of is the patience and the humility you develop with when you're in public places with someone, a loved one, someone you love very much, whose behavior is unpredictable and who might do something that at one time would have really embarrassed you, but now you accept it as part of, you know, their life and you work with them in trying to get through it and move on. So
how does the public react? How does the public react?
Sometimes with curiosity, but when they understand the situation, with acceptance and understanding, many times.
I know that, and I don't know if this was really pointed out in the film or not. I'm sure it is in the full film, but most caregivers are women. Now, Anne, you're in a little bit different situation, a non-traditional role. It's still in our society considered non-traditional that the husband stays home and the wife is working. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about your situation. Was it ever considered that it would be anyone but you?
I'm the oldest of five, and I'm the closest. So I am sure all my siblings would be able to help out, but unfortunately they're not local. So I basically, being the oldest and being the daughter, and culturally it just lends itself that it's me.
Okay, talk about that a little bit, culturally.
Mom and Dad would never consider any type of a facility or a nursing home. It's their house. So even with invitation to live with us for many, many years, they refused because they want to live in their house. In their mind, they're independent, but physically and obviously cognition-wise, it's not fully where it was when they were younger. So I travel back and forth. I sleep there, and then it's just back and forth. So
you're not sleeping in their house?
I am not. So I basically pack up, and I sleep there almost every night.
Oh, okay.
When my sibling comes home on the weekend to visit, I get a little bit of a break, and then I'll be able to sleep at home. So, you know, as with their conditions and with COVID and just being a little bit, why does this happen to me? What did I do? Where's the cure? They tend not to go out, but I need them to continue to be interactive and social. So that's the other challenge, is just continue to ask so that they can participate in whatever, you know, they can. But it takes some pushing.
Do you worry about them maybe leaving the house on their own?
Sometimes Dad, but you know, he knows that, you know, he can't really drive at night. He can still drive.
Oh, he can still drive.
He can still drive during the day, but basically none now, because I take them everywhere.
How old are your parents?
Dad is 87 and Mom is 79.
And your dad's still driving?
And Dad can still drive. Now, I don't know if you want to be on the road when Dad is on.
Have you anticipated the day when you're going to have to say, Dad, no more?
I've been saying, Dad, no more.
Okay.
So he's being good. But it's scary because you don't know what next year is going to bring. And you do have to plan, but you're so tired, and sometimes you're kind of information overload, or not really information overload, but uncertainty of what you're supposed to do and prepare for the future, knowing it's not going to be as bright as you want to. So sometimes you just kind of just don't want to think about it, but you have to think about it.
On your mind all the time.
Yeah.
So, Michael, everyone, I don't think we've ever heard of anyone, there may be someone out there, who said they didn't want to stay in their own home. As I said earlier, you're in a unique situation in that you've worked with those who have been in assisted living and nursing facilities. When is it time, or is it time? How do you make that decision, I guess, is the big question. How is that decision made between keeping mom and dad home as long as you can, or it's time to go where they're safer?
I think it's an individual decision where the family or the caregiver becomes aware of the impending need for someone to be in a caregiving situation other than where they find them now. And also comfortable with the place where that will take place. We have a friend who has identified a particular facility in New Jersey where her daughter will go when she's no longer able to go, and making arrangements there. And it's brought great comfort to her, I think, because of that. So I think it varies from family to family.
I mentioned earlier that one of the things that was very noticeable in the film was the love that those caregivers had. I mean, including the first couple said, "I love him even more." Talked about patience, Anne, but what are your feelings toward your son as far as, obviously he's your son, you love him, but I mean, that may be hard for a lot of people to understand that you don't have that traditional mother-son relationship.
Right. Just because he can't speak doesn't mean he can't show love. So
how does he show love?
Oh, my gosh. Hugs, kisses. You know, he knows, I think, intuitively when maybe we're not happy or I'm having a sad moment, which doesn't happen too much. But I think that he knows. He does use an iPad to communicate, so big technology is, we're just grateful he's living in the world he's been born into. So that's interesting as well. And what I find when he talks the most or uses it the most is when he's in bed at night. And when I finally go tuck him in, I'll see a whole sentence. And I don't know if it's because it's calm or what, but there's some profound thoughts that he has about the day.
Like what?
It'll say, "No, I don't like this. Car, 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 car. Well, yeah, today we tried to get you to go somewhere and you didn't want to go. And Ned, like, now it's calm. You're using your iPad to talk about the day."
What does he like?
Rock music. Live concerts. I have DVDs of every, thank God, I like the music he likes.
Like what? Okay.
AC/DC, a lot of classic rock, John Mayer. We're going through a Russian Coldplay phase. But I did want to say one thing that you asked Mike about when you know that it's time for them to move on. It's very different, right? My child has had his disability since he's been born. And our belief in the world and the work that I do is Connor needs to have an adult human experience just like anyone else. As an ARC who provides residential services, that's what we do. So I have that thought at night, what's going to happen when I die and I'm not here? There are places. We're just grossly underfunded and understaffed. I can't make those two. In my work, I try to make those two things meet, my advocate hat and my parent hat. But yeah, I think tends to be a negative connotation placed on families when they're searching for services. That society, it's almost like, how could you do that? I mean, we've had those families think, we're just having a human experience, and Connor needs to learn to live the life for when I'm not here anymore, and we want to be able to help him through that transition while we can.
Does he ever type, I love you?
He has a sign for I love you, yes. He has some sign, yes.
Yeah. How does it make you feel?
Oh my gosh, so loved, so loved. I think even in his, he signs I'm sorry after he's having a meltdown or something. He'll sign I'm sorry. I didn't ask him to.
What's
he's
the sign for I'm sorry?
Oh, he does, I'm sorry, yeah.
Michael, you were talking about the number of people turning 65 every day. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that, Ann just reminded me, that family where the daughter said, all right, Dad, we're going to rock out. And I thought to myself, okay, we're at an age now where those getting older were listening to rock music when they were younger. They're no longer listening to Lawrence Welk. They are listening to some rock and roll. But what it reminded me of is just what you said about the number of people who are turning 65, mm-hmm. who are getting older all the time.
And remaining very active.
Right.
Many continuing to work, of course, and enjoy those rock concerts. And we run into the traffic in Hershey when they're coming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But, yes, it's a different generation, and that's great. And they're bringing a lot of interesting life to retirement communities today.
Maybe in the planning process, they should come up with a playlist.
Yeah.
We can't stop this conversation without talking about finances. Mm. I just can't imagine what it's like. Okay, you talk about your husband having to stop working, but what about you? I mean, what kind of impact has this had on your finances?
Significant impact, because I've been in the workforce for over 30 years, and then I really have to give it up. And basically, for my own family, I'm living off of my savings since high school that I've been saving. Thank goodness I've been saving. And then mom and dad, Social Security. So financially, it's people used to say as you get older, you don't spend as much. But what I'm finding out is that as you go older, you spend more on things you don't want to spend, but you end up having to spend. It's the necessity, figuring out wheelchairs and walkers and all the things that for daily living that an elderly parent's dependent would need. Now we're thinking, hospital beds, and then what's next? So financially, I worried, do they have enough? And then what's going to happen to me when I'm at the age to retire, what do I have left? So definitely it's on the back of your mind, but someday you just have to say, you know what, let's deal with today. Let's make the best of today, and tomorrow is tomorrow.
What's a wheelchair cost?
Hmm?
What's a wheelchair cost?
Mom had a wheelchair, and thank goodness Dad has pretty good insurance while he was working. So we paid about $800, and the wheelchair was about $5,000?
Yeah. See, I asked that question because probably most people have no idea mm-hmm. that it would cost that much. Something you just said reminded me of this. You said you're preparing for the time when you get older. Has your experience as a caregiver, have you thinking about that more often?
Yes. And obviously, I'm observing that I don't have the best genetics because both parents. So I'm trying to take better care of myself because I don't think I'm going to have a caregiver like the way I am to my parents, just a totally different generation. So I worried about that, but I haven't been able to put too much thought into it because I really don't know what to do.
Right. And you probably don't have the time.
And don't have the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to thank all three of you. I was about to say all three being with us today because I'm still in radio mode. But thank you for sharing your experiences. I mean, it was very insightful for a lot of people. Ann Coolidge, Bion Dagnuin, and Michael Leader, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you.